because a lot of the work they
get so sassy.
Do you remember writing that?
No,
because you didn't.
Oh, I didn't.
No.
Okay, good. Because I was like, that's kind of mean. Why am I calling out Virginia like that? It must have been in a mood.
I was gonna say some of the stuff I did not write. Like,
I made some stuff. Oh, okay. To fit my narrative.
It's okay. Whatever. Let's just go with it.
You're gonna keep getting sassy. You're in a sassy mood.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And you know that I went through these thinking like maybe like did I like forget and did not read the sassiness. I should have paid more closer attention.
You were just like, oh yeah, I responded.
But I didn't. Someone did for me.
Hi. Welcome to season 13 of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time.
This season's theme is all things residential. We are talking about ladies who are involved in residential projects.
As always, we are not experts. We're just sharing stories about the information that we find as friends having a fun conversation. If you find an error, send us an email and we will all continue learning.
Today we have a 3-for-1 special. We're learning about Masako Hayashi, Nobuko Nakahara, and Hatsue Yamada, who were among the first female architects in Japan. And they owned a firm together, which did many housing projects.
Wow, a 3-for-1.
I'm Nurjiri Rivas, remembering I was on a turbulent plane ride when I started my research for this episode in Houston, Texas.
Hi, I'm Jessica Rogers. I'm not remembering a turbulent plane ride, and I'm based out of Miami, Florida.
And I'm Lizzie Rahr. While you were on the plane, I was at work, maybe finishing lunch in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah, I would have been at work, too.
Memories. Well, enough about that. Let's celebrate that we are at the start of a new season. This is a great opportunity to say thank you to all the listeners for being here, listening, and learning along with us.
Yes. Thank you so much, listeners, for sticking with us or joining us fresh.
Yes. Thank you. It's great to be back with another season and some more ladies to tell their stories of.
Okay, let's begin. The time was July 11th, 1928. The place, Asahikawa, Hokkaido, Japan. Masako Hayashi was born.
Welcome, Masako.
Unfortunately, I could not find any backstory at all from this lady. Who were her parents? What did she enjoy doing as a child? What interested her in architecture? I have no idea.
Oh, very sad day. But as we've talked about, sometimes that happens. Maybe Jessica can make something up for us.
Masako had a beautiful life, filled with supportive parents that allowed her to do whatever she wanted within reason. She traveled and explored and lived an educational, idyllic life filled with art and wonder.
Wow.
There you go.
Thank you, Jessica.
I hope that's true.
Me too.
That's all we could do. Now let's fast forward to 1951. She would have been around 23 years old, and she would have been celebrating her graduation from Japan Women's University.
Woo! And I'm assuming we don't know what she studied there? Or do we at least know that she studied architecture?
No, I could not find her major.
Okay.
But I assume it was architecture because she wasted no time getting her own projects under her belt.
Nice.
That same year, she finished her first project. It was a house called the Mr. O Residence, and it was in Tokyo.
Very nice. Okay, I'm looking at a photo of it. I like the offset gable roof.
Agreed. It's very nice. It's a nice mid-century modern abode.
Mm.
Yeah, I would put an offer down if it was for sale and I had money.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, in 1955, she started working on a very special project. Her own home in Goishikawa. And what made it even more special is she was designing it with another very special architect, Shoji Hayashi, who she had just married.
Ooh, hey. wedding bells. That's kind of fun to design your house with your spouse.
It's funny because I think most residential architects will say that working with couples on their homes, it almost becomes like a therapy session.
Yes.
And in general, people might say to not work with your spouse, and here they're doing both. But, you know, they could be different. And also, who wouldn't want to design their own home?
Yeah, that's true. It definitely sometimes becomes like therapy. But sometimes it works. Okay, but who is this guy? Is he worthy of our girl Masako?
Oh, yeah. Shoji Hayashi was the real deal, just like Masako. He was born September 23rd, 1928. So he was actually a few months younger than her. It's kind of cute. He studied architecture at the Tokyo Institute of Technology. He graduated in 1953, and he joined Nikken Sekkei, which to this day is one of Japan's largest architectural firms. Mm-hmm. And throughout his career, he was chief architect, vice president, and vice chairman of that firm.
Oh, wow. Impressive.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. He was also an honorary fellow of the American Institute of Architects, and he was chairman of the Japan Institute of Architects.
Okay, boss. Just as accomplished as Masako.
Yeah, geez. Okay, so Masako knew what was up. She knew how to pick him.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Power couple alert. Burr, 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 burr. Let's discuss the home Masako and Shoji designed together. It feels appropriate for the season.
Agreed.
Yes, let's.
The site was a private alley, and you couldn't see the house from the street, which I thought was very interesting. The form of the house began as a rectangular pavilion, and later, as it was renovated and expanded, they always make sure to keep a view to the garden from the living room.
I like the focus on the garden and trying to keep that view no matter what they change to the house later on. The not visible of the street reminds me of the house in Costa Rica that we saw. It's kind of nice to create privacy that way.
Agreed. I can imagine this play between what is shown and not shown, the tightness of an alleyway, but then a breath of relief of a garden.
Ooh.
And you know that garden had to be banging if they made it a priority to always have a view of said garden.
Yeah.
Good point. So while the thought process behind the home was rooted in Japanese design tradition, Masako and her husband deviated from traditional Japanese construction. They tested out modern materials such as concrete blocks and a concrete slab roof.
Well, you know how we love ourselves some concrete, honey.
Yeah. Concrete roof is really interesting, though. You don't see that super often. And I'm wondering, like, were they trying to use it for passive heating or just, like, trying something fun and new?
Ooh, good question.
I did not find information about that, but I'd like to think that it was for passive heating. They were exploring the use of the material.
Okay. Mm.
Or maybe their area got typhoons.
Mm. Yeah, who knows?
I have no idea. Sorry, I owe you that. Okay. I'm not sure when, but Masako went back to school. Until 1956, you could find her at the Tokyo Institute of Technology learning from Kiyoshi Seike, who was also her husband's professor a few years earlier.
Okay. So Kiyoshi Seiki is an author and professor of architecture at the Tokyo Institute of Technology. He did mostly residential projects, but I can see why Masako would be interested in learning from him. Some of the books that he authored were A Japanese Touch on Your Garden, Contemporary Japanese Homes, and The Art of Japanese Joinery.
Those sound lovely.
Yeah.
After that, in 1958, she started her own architecture firm with Nobuko Nakahara and Hatsue Yamada.
Ooh, cool. Two new architecture bombshells just entered the villa.
That's right. Okay, I love this. Tell us more about these ladies.
To do that, let's go almost 30 years back in time.
Okay.
The time was January 5th, 1929. The place, Urawa, Saitama, Japan. Nobuko Nakahara was born.
Not gonna lie, I kind of forgot this was a multi-lady episode. So I'm excited all over again.
I'm excited too. And I was wondering how and when they were going to make their appearance. So, okay.
Yeah.
This is lady number two.
Yeah, I kind of forgot too when I'm telling the story, so imagine.
We already said it was a 3-for-1.
I know.
We did. Here we go. I believe her mom was involved in politics. The research said she was a city councilor and her dad was a teacher.
Cool. So they were both involved in the community.
Yeah, love it.
At 12, she was at a girls' high school. Some of you may know, I went to an all-girl high school, and I loved it. So whenever I meet a fellow all-girl schooler, I ask about their experience. If I met Nobuko in heaven, I'll ask her, how was school for her?
Mm-hmm. And compare notes.
Yeah.
Or, guys, maybe we invest and get this, like, seance situation going, and then we try that.
No.
Jessica really wants a medium. She's the only one.
Like, why wait till we get to heaven? Why don't we try something right now? Let's call Whoopi Goldberg.
I like the mystery.
Once we are out of the red, like when we're liquid.
We can't afford a medium.
What happened? Let's do that. What's it called? Buy us coffee. Buy us a seance.
Oh, wow.
Check out our show notes and the link on our website for those things.
You know what I just realized didn't come up in Masako's stories?
What?
World War II.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. We made it to 1958 with her and didn't talk about it at all. But we jumped right to 1950 right out the gate. So I kind of assumed we just, like, don't know how she was affected by it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, from what you found, she was born and then went to the university right after the war. So, yeah, maybe it just wasn't significant for her.
I'm sure it was, but, like, we just don't know.
But, like, or it didn't affect her. Yeah. Or
I think it's just not documented in English, readily available for me to find it.
You know? For sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's most likely it.
But I found a little bit of info on Nobuko's experience during wartime.
Okay, curious to hear.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we could say Nobuko grew up in darkness. Because of raid regulations, houses had to keep the lights off at night. They were allowed to have light only in one room.
Wow, that must have been really hard.
Yeah, and only in one room? But, like, couldn't they just have, like, candles? Like, it just seems so extreme.
I mean, it's the war.
Yeah.
It's like rations, but also hiding.
Exactly.
Right? Not being seen.
Yeah. I feel very lucky to never have to live anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like Lissy said, they were hiding, you know, and I'm guessing it was also to avoid getting bombed or soldiers coming in or something.
Yeah.
Yet this made me wonder how a house design and use could be affected by this. Which room would people choose to keep the light on? What would they do there? For Nobuko, at night, she and her family would use the room with the light to get together and read. Because I imagine they had to keep quiet too.
Yeah, that makes sense. But it's also a good point of, like, what room would you choose? I mean, I assume the main public room, right? So it could be shared, because if you're going into sleeping rooms, then you might not need light and that kind of thing. But it's sort of nice that they'd all read together. I kind of like that.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like an interesting design problem to have, but due to unfortunate circumstances, right?
Yeah.
Because not only would you most likely need to be quiet, but you probably want something that feels safe during a raid. Maybe not too close to a window, but maybe yes, so that you could use moonlight. Just so many questions and things to consider.
Oh, good point about safety, but also being able to see outside. Yeah. There's a lot to unpack here, but not enough time. So back to Nobuko. This entire experience, of course, impacted Nobuko's approach to design. She said that after the war, she felt free and felt how bright the world was. She paid special attention to light and shadow.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, that would totally change your opinion on light forever, right? Like, you'd be so aware of it in a way that if you hadn't gone through that, you wouldn't.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But before the war was over, in 1945, her school was closed down as an institution of learning and became a uniform factory for aviators.
I mean, not totally surprising. Again, during those times meant using all the resources that you had during war and stuff like that. And there were examples of that here too, right? Where businesses got changed into manufacturing for different wartime things instead of what they normally were.
Yeah, but what an extreme change, like a school turned factory.
Fortunately, she was accepted that same year at another school, the Kasei Gaikuin Special School. Apparently, this place was known to teach women to be good housewives and mothers. I wonder what that curriculum was.
I got so excited to hear that she got back into school. But like, really? You would think it would be more helpful for her to learn a trade.
Especially in wartime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Couldn't she be building planes or uniforms for the aviators?
Here's a quote from her about her experience there. I joined the health education department. I studied Japanese, Western, and Chinese cuisine and confectionery. After graduating, I realized this wasn't what I truly wanted. So I decided to study architecture.
That's a big pivot, but I'm glad that she realized that's what she wanted to do. And sometimes you have to do something you don't like to figure out you don't like it.
Yep.
True. It is interesting to think that she was remotely interested into this school to begin with.
Well, I'm sure that was just like, you can't go to this school, so you go to this one.
She did what she had to do.
I think it was sort of like, you got to go where you got to go in the war.
I would hope to think that she had options and she just seemed interested. Like, yeah, I'll become a wife and go to wife school. Well, because then she was able to pivot. So I'm happy she did, because then we probably wouldn't be able to tell her story.
Well, yeah.
There wouldn't be a third.
Right. We fully support Nobuko's decision. Welcome to architecture.
Yes.
And with my stamp of approval, she went to Musahi Institute of Technology in 1951 and worked with Kiyoshi Ikebe. I looked him up and did not find a lot of information about him. There seems to be books published about his work, which seems to be residential architecture as well. I'll just say, if you want your Japanese son to grow up to be a residential architect, name him Kiyoshi.
Yes, apparently that's the requirement.
Yep, official title.
Eventually, she became the third woman architect in Japan.
Woo, good for her.
Oh, hey.
Let's pause here for a word from our sponsors. When we come back, we'll discuss how Masako, Nobuko, and Hatsue met and the work they did together.
Hey, designers and curious minds. Ever wondered about the stories hiding within your building's walls? I'm Carrie Seaburn, structural engineer and host of Unstruct, the podcast that decodes and simplifies major concepts of structural design. Behind the math and physics, structural engineering simply predicts building behavior. Join me as we simplify the complex, making structural design accessible to everyone.
Nowadays, instead of measuring it via cost, we're saying, well, what about carbon, you know? We've got two levers now that we can, if an architect has an inefficient design, we can hit them with two levers, if you like.
The official casualty figure is 55,000. Everybody I talked to told me that the actual figure is at least three times as much. And I believe that. I mean, seeing what I saw, Turkish codes are good, and they have been improving, but compliance was completely lacking.
Fluent in steel, concrete, masonry, and timber design, I'll bring you leading engineers to dissect the tales behind their building structure. Whether you're an architect, contractor, engineer, or just love a good story, this podcast is for you.
Yeah, beam penetrations. That's a fun topic on this project.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Unstruct. From within your walls, hear the story behind how your building stands today.
And we're back. Let's talk about how Masako, Nobuko, and Hatsue met, because they didn't meet an architecture school like us.
Oh.
Yeah, because they didn't even go to the same schools. like at all.
But they must have met somewhere before deciding to open up a firm together. LinkedIn didn't exist back then.
Yeah.
It's not like one of them got a subscription to Premium and cold messaged the others and said, "Hi, I've been following your impressive work and believe we would be the right fit to start a firm together."
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. It's probably not how it happened.
So how would they have made those connections and maintained them? Letters? Because, like, no DMs, no follow each other on Instagram.
Yeah. I mean, or some, like, organization or something. But, okay, wait. But do we get to hear about Hatsue's life or just Masako and Nobuko? Excellent question. I'll tell you about Hatsue's life in a little bit. Right now, I want to touch on their work. I feel like this episode has been a really long intro so far. I want to get into some works.
Okay.
Well, that's what happens when you go all over Achiever on us and decide you want to tell three stories at once. You know, why not give each of them their own episode?
Because a lot of the work they did was together. So there would have been a lot of overlap between episodes.
Sure.
If we had done an episode each. It was more fun to tell their stories together in one go.
Okay, if you say so. I mean, I'm having fun so far.
But that makes sense. Yeah.
Just know that at this point of the story, Hatsue would be about to meet Masako and Nobuko.
Okay.
So it's the 1950s. There's literally not a lot of women studying or graduating from architecture school. So whenever they met in school, at work, at a plaza, the beauty salon, a birthday party, you name it, they kept in touch and introduced each other to one another. So 29 of these ladies, between 18 to 26 years of age, decided to start an association together. On September 14, 1953, this Women's Architects Association was born, and it was called PODOKO.
PODOKO? What does it mean? And it looks like an acronym, but I'm loving this banding together of the ladies.
It stands for Thought, Discussion, and Creation, which the ladies wanted to be the main driver of the association. The name came about because one of the group's organizers was studying Esperanto, and supposedly they came up with the name based on those key words in the Esperanto language. Have you guys heard of the Esperanto language? Do you know what it is?
No. But before we get into that, can we just talk for a sec on how I love this gathering of the minds sisterhood thing going on? Like, I think we saw this a little bit with episode 19, where we saw another Nobuko and her photography ladies. And then there's also episode 22 with Dorothy Mae Richardson and, like, her power of community that she was able to create. Oh, I love it.
I agree. It is so, so important. And I love to learn about how these ladies throughout our seasons made it happen in various ways, these communities. I hope that these stories are inspiring listeners to find their tribe. Hope the men listening are inspired too to find their community. Men need brotherhood too.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Y'all go find your bros, start good things together, create meaningful impact somewhere, somehow. To the very least, tell your friends to listen to our show. That's a start. Start a community of listeners.
Yeah, of She Builder Listener Fan Club.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, this is so true. I mean, the community is so important. And so I love to see that, especially when there were so few of them at that time, right? It was so important to have that. And so I'm glad to see that they were doing that.
How crazy it is to create such a thing when they don't have things like a WhatsApp group chat or... Or a group chat in general.
Yeah, I mean, it's more impressive too. Like that time you really had to be like very intentional about meeting people and keeping in touch. So
anyways, Nojiri, can you tell us what this Esperanto language is? Because I've never heard of it.
I've heard of it before, but for some reason I thought it was a religion. Like I've heard the words before, but I thought it was something like Santeria.
Not as good into cults now. Talking of tribes and communities.
I'll tell you right now, I was... very wrong.
Barry?
Yep, apparently I was very wrong.
Okay.
It's like more than wrong. It's like Barry and then there's Barry.
It turns out it's something even more fascinating than a religion. The technical answer is that it's a constructed international auxiliary language, an artificial language. What that means is that it's not from a specific culture, group of people. It was designed to be a common language for people from all over the world to be able to communicate with each other. The goal was for this to become a universal language. It's been around since the 1800s, so it's not new. And it has quite a following, but it has not reached its goal yet.
Fascinating. I should really ask my cousin about this. She just graduated from high school and she's going to college to study linguistics in like a month. She knows all kinds of languages and like ones that not many people know. So I feel like she'd know about this.
Oh, yes. Let us know what she says.
I will.
This Esperanto thing, it sounds so poetic and beautiful, like without a language, without any of that. And I wish I had known about this. Like, why isn't this common knowledge that there's a language out there that's artificial and it's, OMG, we could have listeners that know this language.
That would be so cool.
Yeah.
I actually have a dream of becoming conversational in all the common Romance languages. I'm 2 for 5 right now.
And what are those again?
Well, I'm fluent in Spanish, conversational in Italian. I know a few words in French. Next, I want to tackle Portuguese, and then last but not least, Romanian.
Mm. Now, are you considering adding Esperanto to that mix?
Exactly. That's why I'm thinking it through now.
Oh.
You know it.
That would be cool. I mean, keep us posted. Maybe every wrap-up we'll ask you for an update on this mission so that you are held accountable for it.
That's a good idea. Duolingo, if you're listening and would like to support this show and my dreams to become a polyglot, holla at us, shibospodcast@gmail.com.
Now that would be cool.
Well, that was quite a detour. Let's steer back to Podoko. I looked it up, the translation to Esperanto for those words, thought, discussion, and creation. And I saw a little bit of a connection, but in my opinion, it's a stretch. Thought is pensis. Discussion translates to discuto, and creation is creado.
Hmm. Okay. So they took the first letters and added O's to each one, kind of?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
So Masako, Nobuko, and Hatsue were all part of those 29 founding members. While there, I'm not sure which one of them was the hookup. Maybe it was all three of them, but they received commissions from the Women's Association of Yokohama City. They were approached to design a space for the association. So Masako, Nobuko, and Hatsue started working on the design together. Even though the project was not built, this was the catalyst for these ladies. They thought, you know what? We work pretty well together. And so they established the firm Hayashi, Yamada, and Nakahara, Architectural Design Circle, in 1958.
That's so interesting. I wonder how the three of them were chosen for that first commission, like out of the 29 members.
Oh, yeah. No, Jiri, this also reminds me of our R Cuadrado days.
Yeah.
Also, side note, I was talking to a friend about said professor that gave us that nickname. Apparently, that was like his term. He liked calling everyone like that were pairs or groups. He would just call them like so-and-so Cuadrado or...
Before us?
Yeah. I felt a little gypped in.
Oh.
Oh, sad.
But anyway, we'll talk about it offline.
Okay.
But so to Lizzie's question, I'm thinking that they were probably like buddies and thought, hey, want to try to work on this thing together? And then it became, how Nojiri said, just like the three of them, just now they're a group.
Yeah, it was that easy. They went on to do a lot of good work together. And a big chunk of that was houses. They had a project called the Angle Brace House. And during the 1960s, they did the summer house Karuizawa, the Villa Inawashiro in Fukushima Prefecture, and the Hexagonal Mountain Lodge and other ski lodges. Those last ski lodges were in collaboration with Shin Architectural Office. And a lot of this work has been published in books and magazines.
Ooh, very nice. Does that mean we'll get to see them in the show notes?
Yes, please do tell. With names like that, we need the ocular proof. I want to know what a hexagonal mountain lodge is.
I hope so.
Check out our show notes if we were able to.
During this period, they also did the Seashell Gallery in Shikoku, which is the home of a large selection of local and foreign oyster shells. On the website, Un Día Una Arquitecta, they described it, and I quote, a blue pavilion with skylight illumination that evokes the depths of the sea. Externally, the large eaves refer to vernacular Japanese architecture influenced by brutalism, resulting in a unique and contemporary expression.
That sounds really cool. But I need to circle back to the gallery subject, which is oyster shells from around the world. What a fascinating thing to like have a whole gallery of that. I'm so intrigued. But it sounds like they created a building that really evoked what it was supposed to show off, right?
Yeah, no mystery.
But not in an obvious way.
Right.
Yeah, it's not a duck.
Like a duck, exactly. I think it sounds beautiful.
It does, yeah.
The Seashell Gallery has been selected by Dokomomo as one of the 100 most important modern buildings in Japan.
Wow.
That's such an incredible honor.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
Dokomomo is an international nonprofit organization dedicated to documentation and conservation of buildings, sites, and neighborhoods of the modern movement. Isn't it amazing that this exists?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I'm excited. I'm going to look up even more about that and see how I can join.
Have you not used that as a site before? Sorry, it just as an aside, like as a resource?
I feel like I've used it as a resource.
Yeah.
I feel like I've seen it before, but I never thought of looking up what it was. I don't think I've used it as a resource.
I never thought of it as an organization. I thought it was like a publication, like Arch Daily.
Same.
Ladies, I'm looking at the time, 38 minutes, and thinking it's a good idea to pause here and continue sharing their story on next week's episode because I still owe you Hatsue's beginnings.
What? A cliffhanger?
I know.
I mean, I guess we're talking about three ladies. That seems fair to do a two-parter, but still, I will be waiting in suspense for next week's episode because you're just really leaving us in suspense about Hatsue.
Yeah.
I've already asked, and you were like, just a little later.
Mm-hmm.
Now a little later is a long way later. It's not a little later.
It's a week.
And this better not be surprise. Ha-ha, our first three-parter. Because we're telling three stories at the end.
Can you imagine?
You asked me for three episodes.
That's true. She did.
I know, but there's three individual stories, not like pieces and like breadcrumbing us along the way. Listen, this is the start of our new season, okay? I am ready to dive into it. And now you're telling me we gotta wait another week?
I know, because I'm already so interested in their story so far.
Yes, I was pumped for this season. Like, let's go. And now we're left hanging for another week.
I'm sorry. If it helps, I didn't do this on purpose. I didn't know it would happen. It just did.
Mm-hmm.
And listeners, you share our frustration. So we'll see you next week.
All right. Now we have reached the second part of our episode, the caryatid. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek or Greek-style building. In each episode, we choose a caryatid. A woman who is working today, furthering the profession through their work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode. Drum roll, please.
Satoko Shinohara.
Woo!
Yay!
Yay! Satoko!
Satoko Shinohara is a Japanese architect, educator, and researcher known for her innovative approach to housing and community-based design. I chose her today as the caryatid because of her work, which focuses mostly on housing. She believes that housing is inherently social, a tool to foster relationships among people, place, and the environment.
I agree. I love that sentiment.
Hear, hear.
She's a graduate from Japan Women's University. In 1983, she earned her master's with her thesis focusing on tea house architecture and working under residential architect Kimiko Takahashi. She went on to work at architecture firms in Tokyo and in 1986 started the firm Spatial Design Studio, SDS, with her husband, similar to Masako. Later, her husband left that firm to start a solo practice, but Satoko runs the firm to this day.
Oh, I see. So she took over after he left?
Seems that way.
Yeah, like she became the main person.
Okay.
Very interesting.
A decade after starting her own firm, she became a professor at Japan Women's University, and she became the university's president in 2020.
Of course, you can't just have one job. So,
Yep, it's all about the multiple streams of income. You know,
as president, she's done a lot of good things. For example, she renamed the Faculty of Home Economics to the Faculty of Human Sciences and Design. And she revised admission policies to admit transgender women.
Oh, love it.
Yes, we love a progressive person. Let's go. Figure snaps if you can't hear them.
Through her work, Satoko has been exploring share houses in response to Tokyo's growing population of single-person households. Her 2012 project, Share Jiraicho, designed with Ayano Ichimura, is considered the city's first purpose-built share house. It features private bedrooms and shared kitchens, bathrooms, and living areas. A soft plastic membrane replaces the front door, blending private and public space and inviting local community participation. The building's high ceiling entrance hall doubles as a community event space.
That's super interesting. I like how she's designing for a new community demographic, right? Like a growing number of single people, but still wanting them to have community.
Yeah, I mean, that is very, I feel like, on topic today too, especially when you think of world's concern about the population growth and how there's not that many like families, but more single people. So, yeah. But this description is everything, okay? A soft plastic membrane replacing the front door. Like, I like where she's headed at.
Yeah. I don't know if I live there, but it seems really interesting.
I don't like the idea of a shared kitchen. I'm sorry. We've had discussions. Yeah, I don't want someone loading the dishwasher how I don't like.
In 2021, she partnered with her son, Taichi, and Uchimura on Share Tenjincho, a 9-story mixed-use building in Tokyo. It includes a rotating chef-led restaurant, co-working offices, and shared residential spaces, all designed to enhance social connection.
I just really appreciate her focus on social connection and trying to create spaces for users to interact.
Yes, agreed. You know, there's this thing called the loneliness epidemic. I don't know if you guys have heard about it.
Yeah.
It's very like on the nose of like what's going on. So it's cool. And also the place sounds like a really cool space. Co-working offices, chef-led restaurants, you know, that sounds awesome. And we love a son and mother duo. So beautiful.
Yeah, I also really like how Satoko reimagines residential architecture to be more communal, inclusive, and sustainable.
Yeah, super important.
It's interesting to think about it, especially at this moment in time where we are with this season of residential, as our residential things in our theme. Like, it makes me wonder if this is like the next evolution of residential architecture, you know? And is Satoko like in the pioneer of it, or one of them?
We'll see.
Before we say goodbye, we want to say thank you to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical advisor, and most of all, thank you for listening.
Remember to check out our show notes for links to all of our resources on this episode, as well as pictures of projects we've talked about.
We hope you enjoyed learning about today's lady and Caryatid along with our banter, and that you are inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you've enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, colleagues, sisters, and brothers, and tell them to give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify, and write us a review. This will all help us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about these amazing ladies with us.
Your support means everything to us. If you've enjoyed our content and want other ways to help us with our mission, you can support us by visiting our website for merchandise.
If you don't need any more swag, but you'd still like to consider supporting the research we're doing, you can donate to us on our website, shebuildspodcast.com/donate. Or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/shebuildspodcast. You can also find links to all of these items on our website.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GableMedia.com.
We're excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at shebuildspodcast@gmail.com, leave a comment on our website at shebuildspodcast.com, or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at shebuildspodcast and on X at shebuildspod. Until then, see ya!
Bye!
Bye!